Welcome back to Beyond the Uniform. I'm Justin Asiri, and each week I interview military veterans about their civilian career. Today's episode number 78 with Josh Carter.
You know, stop worrying about the beta and just get the product out. Just get the product out. If you are not embarrassed by your first product, then you're doing it wrong. It should be ugly. It should be clunky. It should be what you think it should be, but less. And once you get it in the hands of the customer is going to tell you what they like and what they don't like. And I think that was where we were trying to be perfectionists, as you probably have gone through this as well, is you want your product to be perfect. But you make these assumptions that it's going to be valuable. And the best way to do that is get it into the hands of the customers, who will tell you whether or not they find value in it.
The top reason to listen to today's episode is, number one, support. Josh has been living in the startup world for a while and has a great overview of different resources available for other veteran entrepreneurs. In particular, he talks about Techstars and gives a fantastic overview of this three-month program, as well as Patriot Bootcamp and other great resources. As always, at beyondtheuniform.io, you'll find show notes for this episode with links to everything we discuss, as well as a directory of veteran resources, ebooks, and recommendations for other website, podcasts, and books. If you're interested in any of those books, audible.com is offering Beyond the Uniform listeners a free audiobook of your choosing. You can find out more at beyondtheuniform.io/books. So with that, let's dive in to my interview with Josh Carter. Well, joining me today in Portland, Oregon, is Josh Carter. Josh, welcome to Beyond the Uniform.
Thanks, Justin. It's good to be here.
So for listeners, wanted to give a quick background. Josh is the co-founder and CEO of Brightwork, which is a microservices platform that enables developers to build faster on a reliable and scalable solution. Since their founding, they've raised over $300,000 in funding and have gone through Techstars in Chicago. Josh started out in the Navy, where he served for about 3 years. And since then, he's held multiple engineering roles in the telecom industry and eventually a senior support engineer at the startup Twilio, a communication startup that went public earlier this year. Josh also founded his own digital marketing agency, Plunk, and is also a former founding board member of Operation Code. So, Josh, I always like to start out by asking about when you knew you were going to leave the Navy and how you approached that decision.
Yeah, I think it started with how I approached going in. I really wanted to go to the Art Academy in San Francisco. I grew up in the Bay Area. and so I knew I just wanted to go in the military to get the college funding and get out. So didn't spend a whole lot of time really worrying about what I was going to do while I was in the Navy, just the amount of time I was going to spend. So, you know, I did a really short stint, got out, and did just that. Went into the Art Academy in San Francisco.
That's great. I mean, I love the laser focus too. I think that in any job, you get kind of out of it what you put in, what you want to get out of it. And so, in going in with clear expectations makes it much more useful, and you're able to use that time a lot more wisely. And so, it sounds like your first job search was pretty easy, because that was going to the Art Institute. Is that right?
Yeah, I went to the Art Academy, but it wasn't what I thought it was going to be. And so I actually ended up dropping out and went into telecommunications, of all things. And I just kind of fell into that industry. It wasn't something that I'd really thought much about or given it much thought. A family member had asked if, you know, what I wanted to do, and the company she was working for was hiring. So went and took the test to go work at Pac Bell at the time, which is late 90s. Did Pac Bell for a while, and from there just kind of moved along the telecom spectrum. And I joke that I've worked if there was an evolutionary chart of the telecommunications industry, I've pretty much worked it all the way to where, you know, as you mentioned already, I worked at Twilio for the last 4 years.
I guess for our listeners who might not be familiar with the telecom industry, how would you explain the jobs that you did as an engineer there?
Yeah, so a lot of the roles that I held at various companies was to be an installer or an engineer putting in these phone systems. So, for example, Fresno State University had a 5,000 seat phone system, and I was one of the engineers on that project where we took out an old system and put in a new voice over IP system. So that was primarily my role. in a lot of those jobs, whether it was building out a call center or putting in a new phone system, or configuring, you know, some system, that was a really hands-on role for me throughout my career.
And I wanted to dive into your experience at Brightwork, but I'm wondering, what would you want listeners to know about what you did up until that? Because I know you had a full, you know, a lot of experience before that, but what's important for them to know?
Yeah, I think, you know, the kind of filling in the gap from when I left telecom to going into doing Brightwork, you know, a lot of the things that I'd been doing while I was doing telecom work, I was doing some things on the side as well. I've always been a workaholic. I don't know why. It's just something that is entrenched in my DNA. So I always had something going on the side, whether it was booking concerts or doing an internet radio show or doing Plunk. There was always something I was doing on the side. And what was interesting about the lead up into Brightwork was every step of those side projects led me very clearly to doing Brightwork. So, you know, I started out booking concerts in the Bay Area, and I lost a lot of money doing that. So my wife got tired of us losing money and said, you know, we got to find something else that doesn't lose as much money. So I did internet radio for a while. And as you probably know, you know, the overhead for an internet radio show is pretty nominal. So what it did was it kept me in the music industry. It kept me in this conversation of where people thought the music industry was headed. And it was a lot of fun. I had Imagine Dragons, Henry Rollins, Margaret Cho, had some great conversations doing that radio program. And then I was going to conferences, and what I was hearing was this conversation around how musicians were really just disconnected from where the music industry was headed from a perspective of technology. You know, at the time, Beats had just been acquired by Apple for $3 billion, but if you ask the average band, they really didn't see a benefit out of that. And that was clear from Pandora or Spotify, and you talk to musicians, and there's a lot of tension there. And so when we created Plunk, we actually created Plunk to kind of bridge that gap, to build out technology solutions, to put technology back in the hands of musicians that could benefit from it. But this was a service business. And at some point we knew, being a service business, we couldn't sustain a business that way. So we wanted to create a product. And that's really how Brightwork was born. It was born out of wanting to create a product that made things easier in the development phase. So it's really interesting that everything that I'd done on the side was a very clear step to the next thing. And Brightwork was just that next logical step.
And before we go on with that, I'm just curious. So you were actively, and I love that story. And, you know, I just get the sense that you do have all of this energy and I would say like creative energy that needs an outlet wherever you're at.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering what it was like to be, actively employed at Twilio while also running your own digital media agency on the side.
Yeah, it was a challenge for a while. I was still able to do my day job, and I gave all my priority to my day job. I think what made it easier for me was I had a great team behind me at Plunk that was really helping to drive some of the day-to-day stuff. So my involvement was, you know, 50-50. I was doing Twilio during the day, and then, you know, when I was wrapping up my work and during the evening times, I would get into doing my work at Plunk. And then after a while, it just started to, you know, I was able to transition into doing Brightwork full time after we got into Techstars.
I think that's great, though. I think that, you know, I'm a big fan of side projects and passion projects. And, you know, whether it was your radio hosting, whether it was Plunk, whether, you know, all of these things, I think that they give you more energy for your main job. And yeah. And so I'm also curious, what was like the, can you pinpoint the moment where you first thought of the idea for Brightwork? You talked about these conversations what was that inception point?
Yeah, for us, we were really trying to find ways to build more value within not only the company, but the things that we could do for our clients. So the early iteration of Brightwork was an API analytics API, So basically what we were going to do was take all of these different APIs that were data and analytics and aggregate them into one API. The problem with that was, after a while, we discovered that we weren't really filling in any data gaps. We were just creating redundancy because all of these data APIs do a great job of pulling reports that clients need to understand their solutions and how they're being used. And so we started to ask a lot of developers about what they wanted to, what they felt was valuable. And what we kept landing on was it's really difficult to start from scratch every time they need to build a new solution. And we felt that at Plunk as well. We were building solutions for Disney, Taco Bell, Pabst Blue Ribbon. We built an app for the Super Bowl. And every single time we had to individually configure these back-end components. And at the time, we were hanging out with this gentleman, Phil Taylor, who's now my CTO, and he was doing consulting work for brands like Nike and Providence Health and dealing with the same exact problem, but in a different way. He was building up enterprise service bus systems, and every time he had to spin up one of these platforms, he was individually configuring each of these back-end components. So that's where we started to really focus our efforts was, let's build out a backend as a service that could really speed up the development time for developers. And so that's how Brightwork really was where we found our focus. As we built out the platform, we started to think about features that could really separate us from the incumbents that are out there. And some of the things that we talked about was, you know, doing API switching, this thought of, you know, if I have Twilio as my API for communications, but for some reason it's out of service, I should be able to either load balance or do some sort of fault tolerance where I can fail over to another provider. And so that was a feature early on that we started to develop and something that we're going to roll out the end of next quarter. And it really resonated with the businesses and creative agencies that we started to sell to.
That's awesome. What about Techstars? What was that experience like? And if you guys are based in Portland, I'm just curious where the Chicago Techstars came in.
Yeah, that's a really cool story. So we kept applying to Seattle Techstars, and I think our assumption was that every Techstars program is the same and that there's a centralized curriculum and each program just kind of abides by that centralized curriculum. And we were completely wrong. And I had gone through a couple of these things called Patriot Boot Camps, which is a Techstars program, but it's sort of an ancillary program. It's sort of off the core of what Techstars does. And it's an independent program. It runs for a weekend. And I'd gone to the one in Phoenix, Arizona. And at the time, I had met Dave Dratch, who's the VP of Business Development for Techstars, and who also sits on the board for Patriot Bootcamp. And he and I had a conversation. He was really interested to hear more about what Brightwork was doing. And he connected us with somebody that was doing pipeline for startups. In other words, he was their matchmaker for the startups and the programs around the country for Techstars. And so we had a great conversation with that gentleman, and he said, look, there's two programs I think would be perfect for you, either New York or Chicago. And because the reason why those two were important, because they had the strengths where we had our weaknesses. So if it was growth or marketing to developers or business to business, these two programs are really, really strong in those two areas. So we applied for both. We talked to Troy Hennikoff and Brian Lurson, who are the managing directors over in Chicago. Really hit it off with both of them. They really understood what we were doing. They understood the problem. They understood the solution. They asked all the right questions. So we really pursued trying to get into Chicago. And we flew out. We met with Brian and Troy and also Sam Yagan, who was the CEO of Match.com. And it was an interesting meeting. We sat down with them. We had our final meeting. It was actually Cinco de Mayo. We're in Chicago. And Sam, we walked out, Phil and I walked out of the meeting thinking that we had messed up the meeting because Sam was just very upfront, which he is. If anybody's met Sam Yagan, he's a great, very smart person, very pragmatic. But we thought we screwed the whole thing up. So we went back to Portland with our tails between our legs, thinking we didn't get in the program. And we got a call the next day and they offered us a slot. And Phil and I both have families. So we actually left our families back in Portland and moved to Chicago for the duration of the program. And the program was really set up very similar to a military boot camp where they break you down to build you up the way you're supposed to be operating. And so that first month is really so intense. You have no control over your calendar. They flood you with meetings every day. You have 5 to 8 meetings every day with different business leaders, people in the industry, VCs, angel investors, who really give you great feedback about your product. And that first month does one of two things. It helps you hone your story, and it helps really get good feedback about what you should be doing. So that first month was really important. And then they go into the next month, which is growth. And then the last month, you really focus on honing your pitch for demo day at the end of the program.
And does Techstars, does it cost money, or do they take a percentage of the company, or what does that relationship become?
Yeah, they become an investor in the company, and the total investment's $120K. They take 6% of the company for that. And the nice thing is, you know, as a company, you really kind of try to figure out if that's worth it. But the value add there for Techstars is, one, we're first-time founders of a VC-backed company, and so we wanted to put all the tools in our tool belt that could lead to the greatest opportunity for success. So we knew Techstars would give us that foundational level of knowledge. The other part of it is there's a tremendous network in Techstars. If there's somebody I want to meet, if there's somebody that I want to talk to, chances are somebody within Techstars is a degree or two away from that person. I can always get a meeting with somebody I want to get a meeting with. And so that is of tremendous value to us. The other thing is they have yearly events. They have one called FounderCon, which they get all the founders together every year in one city. And you spend 3 or 4 days meeting with other founders, meeting with businesses, meeting with investors. And it's a great way to reconnect into the ecosystem. The other thing is that they do so well is that they'll go to other events. For example, there's Consumer Electronics Show coming up in Vegas. They have a great footprint there. And there's going to be a Biz Dev Day. It's just another way that Techstars network adds value to what you're doing as a business operator.
That's a fantastic overview of Techstars, and I've heard of them. I wasn't as familiar with the mechanics of it, but it does sound like, especially for first-time entrepreneurs, I wouldn't even put you – it's funny that you describe yourself that way, because I you know, in just viewing your background before we spoke, I viewed you as kind of a multiple entrepreneur between Plunk and just these different things that you've done before. But I hear what you're saying, like first time with venture backing, just giving you all of the skills you need, giving you that network and giving that support and some initial capital is pretty mm-hmm. incredible. And you had said it with Patriot Bootcamp. Did you do that separately from this, or was this, is that the, because I'm curious to learn more about Patriot Bootcamp. I'm connecting with their team pretty soon, but what was your experience with Patriot Bootcamp?
Yeah, so I went through a couple of those programs. I went through the one in Madison, Wisconsin in 2014, and then I went again this past February in 2016 in Phoenix. And really what it is, it's sort of an offshoot of the Techstars core program. They really kind of try to do what they can to compress the amount of information that you need to be valuable, but they do it in a weekend. So you have Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and they just push a lot of information through you. They try to introduce you to as many business leaders, as many tech mentors as they can in that weekend. But it really is a very similar program to the Techstars core program, in that you have a Mentor Madness type of time. You have, you know, you're meeting with VC and angel and institutional investors. And then there's discussions and panels and talks about how you could better hone your pitch, about how you could write a better business plan or financial modeling, which a lot of entrepreneurs don't think is very important. But when you finally sit down and do the financial model, you really start to see all the different levers and knobs that control how much runway you have in your business. And so it's such a great educational tool, but it's also just overall the program is a value add to anybody just trying to think about what kind of business they want to build out.
That's great. And for listeners interested in Patriot Bootcamp, what's like the rough price range for that one weekend?
I don't think they charge anything. It's you apply through, I think, patriotbootcamp.org. But there's no cost to the entrepreneur for that program.
Wow. All right. That's that is great, man. That's really awesome. And for listeners, as always on beyondtheuniform.io, I'll have show notes with links to all these resources. What about your team, Josh? I'm wondering the founding team, how you found them, and advice you'd have for other veterans in finding kind of co-founders and that the initial team members.
Yeah, that's where it gets really interesting. With Plunk, we had a built-in team already, and we brought in Phil because he was a brilliant architect and has built some really amazing software platforms in the past. So he was somebody that we had at Plunk had always had our eye on and kept really close. The Portland tech ecosystem is a really small one, so you end up running into the same people over and over again. So you get to learn their background pretty well. And so when you have these ideas, it's really easy to sort of pull from your mental Rolodex of these different people you've met and their talents and their skill set. And so Phil was somebody that we courted early on, and I had so the way we operated was we took Plunk, and that was a separate entity, and then Brightwork was a separate business entity as well. And the reason we did that is because we knew we were going to get venture backing for Brightwork. We didn't want having a service company to drag that down, so we made it two separate entities. And the original plan was to have Brightwork sort of roll in as a product for Plunk, but we just discovered that Brightwork was more valuable, and we ended up folding Plunk. And so at the time, we had brought one of the other founders that I had with me at Plunk over to Brightwork, but it ended up being that it didn't work out, so we actually had to let that person go. And so for a long time, it's just been Phil and I running Brightwork. And that was a really important lesson for me because I really trust that people can do what they say they can do. And when they can't, it's really hard for me to hold that person accountable. But it's a conversation you have to have. So my advice for somebody looking for a co-founder is document everything, first and foremost. At the end of the day, this is a business. It's not personal. And you need to be able to separate that. But the other thing is you need to align your expectations with your co-founder. And if those expectations don't line up, you need to hold each other accountable. One of the things that we did at Twilio that Jeff, Evan, and John, the founders of Twilio, what they did early on was they built values for Twilio. And if you go to twilio.com, there's these 9 values that they have listed on their website. And it really set a precedent for us that we needed to build values for our company as well. So Phil and I built out these values that we both agreed were really important, because what it does is, one, it makes sure that I understand where Phil stands with his values and he understands where I stand. And if we fall short of those values, we've agreed those are important to us. Now we can hold each other accountable when we fall short. But the other thing that does for us is now anybody we bring into the company needs to understand that those values are supremely important to us and live those values. If they're not important to those folks, they're not a good culture fit for our company. And so as your listeners are thinking about what business they want to grow, what kind of business they want to have, they need to think about, one, who they're bringing into the company, especially early co-founders, because it's a marriage. You are married to that person, and there's paperwork involved. It's exactly like a marriage. And there's going to be ups and downs. And you just need to know how to ride that wave. But the biggest thing that always leads to tension is a misalignment of expectations. So and I can't stress that enough. I know I keep going back to it, but you need to ensure that the person that you're bringing in understands what he or she is getting themselves into, and you need to understand that as well. If you're not ready for that, then there's going to be tension. And 80% of companies fail because of their founders, not because they ran out of money, not because they couldn't get customer traction. 80% of companies fail because their founders made bad decisions or they couldn't get along. And that's a big important number. A lot of companies fail for other reasons, but a lot of them fail because they couldn't find a way to align the expectations and make those early decisions efficiently.
That's great. And I love that piece on values. And I know it's something I was cynical on for a very long time, of being a useless exercise. But I think it does, you know, we make so many assumptions on how we view the world and that others view it in the same way, or that our goals or expectations are the same. And so it really does crystallize. Even between two people, like you said, like that marriage analogy, I think is so true. And so it crystallizes that you're agreeing on what's going to be important. And then as you grow the team, you're able to filter them through that lens and make sure they meet those values so that they can scale with you with the company.
Yeah, at the end of the day, you want to build a culture. And it's just as important to have that culture early on when it's just two people. But it's really important when you have 20, 30, or 50 people. And those values early on are important because now you have something to point to. And I remember being an early – I think I was like employee 60 at Twilio. We still fit in a small kitchen when we did all our all-hands meetings. But I remember – we would go into these postmortems when we had an outage and we'd start going, okay, well, where does that fit in our nine values? And we start with why. Why did this happen? Why wasn't that done? Why was this? And it really set it up because everything we did day to day was really centered around these nine values. And I think it's an intricate reason why Twilio was so successful.
That's awesome. And what about your day-to-day life? What does life look like for you right now in an early stage startup?
Oh, man, that is a great question. there are days where it's a roller coaster. It really is, especially when you're in early stage. You're trying to get additional funding. You want to grow the team. You know, there's days where you're just not sure if this is going to work. And there's days where you're going to take over the world. And I think it's really easy to get happy years when things go well, but you do appreciate when good times happen. For me, day to day, it could vary. We try to do our best. Phil and I try to do our best to go work in an office. We work at a co-working spot in Portland. We try to get together as often as we can. I think Fridays we both work from home, but for the most part, we get up just like everybody does, and we drive to work, and we do our job. We sit down and have meetings about what we're going to be doing for the week. We talk about what features we want to roll out. I think the difference is that as a small team, you wear so many hats that I could be doing biz dev one moment, 1 hour. I could be doing investor calls the next hour. I can be doing customer calls the next hour. I could be doing such a myriad of things in that day. I could be doing HR, running payroll. So there's just so many things I do during the day. And then, when I get home, it's being an entrepreneur of an early stage startup means that you don't have a 9-to-5. You don't even have a Monday through Friday. So you basically work as much as you possibly can to get this thing going. And it's not for the faint of heart. You have to have stamina. You have to take really good care of yourself and have, good health habits, because it's a grind and it's not something that you go in thinking that it's going to be very easy. I think we had a lot of assumptions being a tech service company that raising money was going to be very easy and that we were going to be able to acquire thousands of customers. And that hasn't panned out the way we thought. And it's not because we don't have a prolific platform. It's just, it was a bad assumption on our part. And so we've learned to just throw out all of our assumptions and do things that make a difference. And that's how we've been able to grow to where we're at today.
That's great. It's it's like having a newborn baby, it seems like, at times, where it's so unpredictable and so fragile. But I think that also underscores why it's so important to start something that you're passionate about, because you're going to be spending so much time on it. It becomes so all-consuming that it's like, man, you better really enjoy the type of work that you're doing, because you're going to be doing a lot of it.
Yeah. Yep, absolutely.
What would you want? I know so many veterans express a desire to start a company, and having done that, I'm wondering what advice you have for other veterans looking to do the same.
Yeah, I think the biggest advice I would give is whatever service or product you're building, you need to find somebody to pay for it. I mean, that ultimately, having somebody pay for your idea or your product or your service validates your hypothesis, because until somebody does, that's exactly what your business is. It's a hypothesis. You think you have a great idea and you think this is going to be valuable to somebody, but until somebody hands you money to do that, it's exactly that. So I think a lot of entrepreneurs assume, and I this isn't unique to veteran entrepreneurs. I see this across the board. A lot of entrepreneurs say, I have a great idea. I need to go find a co-founder, and then I need to go raise money. And that's such a backwards way to think about things. One, because the economy is tightening up and access to capital is very limited. The other thing is that a lot of investors today, they want to see some sort of traction in order to mitigate their risk. And that's happening in every market, not just the Bay Area. What's happening is we're seeing a pullback of access to capital. So entrepreneurs have so much more to prove out before they can get real VC investment or even angel investment into their business. So vetting out their hypothesis, making sure that somebody will pay for it, showing that that's repeatable, getting more than one person to do it, then you can start to show that this is something that's valuable to folks. And even if it's just you have a business idea that you take to a business and they sign a letter of intent, that is still, for most investors, good enough to vet out that idea. So I would recommend any of your listeners thinking about building out a business that they really figure out how they can prove out their hypothesis in a real tangible way.
That's great. Yeah, I think that's so true. And I think back on my own entrepreneurial journey that the times that I've been least efficient as an operator is when I had the most capital. And that's when I stopped relying on people paying me money for the products we were building. And I think that one regret I have is not keeping a closer loop on that of just like, I think you put it perfectly. Like, you need to charge people. It's an idea until people are paying you. And so we would build all sorts of products that people didn't want and didn't need. And so I think even for startups, as they grow, it's important to keep that mindset of always building things that people are going to pay for, because it's so easy to lose focus and start to build what you think they need, but they don't actually need.
Yeah. One of the best pieces of advice we got through Techstars was actually through somebody out of my network. John Sheehan at Runscope had told us, stop worrying about the beta and just get the product out. Just get the product out. If you are not embarrassed by your first product, then you're doing it wrong. It should be ugly. It should be clunky. It should be, it should be what you think it should be, but less. And once you get it in the hands of the customer is going to tell you what they like and what they don't like. And I think that was where we were trying to be perfectionists, as you probably have gone through this as well, is you want your product to be perfect, but you make these assumptions that it's going to be valuable. And the best way to do that is get it into the hands of the customers, who will tell you whether or not they find value in it. And what we found surprising was we had these product roadmap milestones that we wanted to get through. And a lot of them were bumped up because we thought our customers wanted this one particular feature later in the life cycle of our product roadmap. But really it was way more important. So we bumped it up. But we had to have those conversations with them first and foremost to understand that before we could even build that. And so it rarely makes sense to try to perfect your product until you get early adopters to really take a look at it and vet out what they like and what they don't like. The other piece of advice I give is that there'll always be another set of customers to come through. You have your first 100 customers. If they fall out of the pipeline, you can keep getting another 100 customers. You're not gonna tarnish your reputation if you make a few customers mad because you didn't build the product that they thought was perfect for their use case. But what you want to do is keep iterating and keep fixing the problems and try to find where your hypothesis and their problem intersect, if that makes sense.
Yeah, man, I think that's such great advice. It makes me think of when I was at the Stanford Design Center, they used to do this exercise that they would call 5-minute prototypes. And you would literally, like, if they were going to invent a new cup of ramen experience, you would have 5 minutes to build a prototype. And the theory was that, if you, one, exactly like you said perfectly, like if you don't know what the customer actually wants. And so you need to get it in their hands and see how they use it, because there's this huge discrepancy between what people say they do and what they actually do, and what they say they want and what they actually want. But the other piece that I just think of a lot was they talked about that emotional commitment to a product. And if you spend 40 or 50 hours building a product, product, you're like married to this thing. And then when someone tells you, like, I want the button over there, or I want the handle over here, or I want this lid over here, you're not as willing to throw away your idea of perfection and listen to the customer. And so I think your advice is so spot on. And I think it's such a common mistake that I've made, and I've seen other entrepreneurs make, is you just really, you end up polishing the Titanic, you know, you really put all this work perfecting something that doesn't even matter, or building features for a product that doesn't matter. And so, yeah, I think you're spot on that. What about, I'm wondering, you've already covered a lot of great resources with Techstars and Patriot Bootcamp. I'm wondering what else has been helpful for you that you would want to share with other veterans? It could be books or websites or programs or podcasts, but what has helped you in your entrepreneurial journey that might help other vets?
Sure. One of the things that we created early on here in Portland was a meetup. And we created a meetup called Coffee with Co-Founders. And I highly recommend, if you don't have a Coffee with Co-Founders set up in your market, just go to meetup.com and create it. It's such a valuable thing. And the reason why they're valuable is, one, they're really this low-key event that we rotate through different coffee houses here in Portland. And it's not really unique to just being a tech meetup. I mean, I get marketing folks. We had an agricultural founder this past meetup. But what you get out of it is you start to have discussions with other founders about what they're struggling with. And chances are, no matter what industry they're in, they're struggling with almost the exact same thing you're struggling with. So it's a nice, low-key, casual event. We sit down, we have coffee, we talk about what our projects are, we talk about what the biggest problems are, and it's a safe space. It's founders only. We don't offer it to any service providers. So, you know, banking companies can't come in, insurance companies can't come in, third-party HR headhunters can't come in. It's really just founders. And we talk about, you know, as I said, what we're struggling with, what our biggest problems are, and we start to talk out how we can fix it. And it's a great way. I've made great friends out of that event. We've been doing it the last 2 years. We have, I think, over 1,200 people on the meetup now. We usually get 40 to 30 people that show up once a month when we do these things. But there's such a valuable part of the journey as an entrepreneur, because you're not going to be able to do this alone. You're going to really need to lean on your network. And whether it's getting your first friends and family funding from aunts and uncles and moms and dads and brothers and stuff like that, or it's getting advice from people that you respect, finding a mentor that really resonates with you that you can keep updated, whatever it is, you need to find resources. And if resources don't exist, you need to create those resources. And for us, this Coffee with Co-Founders is such an important piece of it. It's really low-hanging fruit. I don't have to take a tremendous amount of time on it. I find a coffee shop, I plan the meetup, and I just show up. So it takes a really low amount of time, and the impact is really high. So yeah, I mean, I would just recommend that people find a network that really resonates with them, that can help not only their business, but where they can be helpful as well.
That's great. And I think that's so important too, because it seems like there's so much about, I think, starting a company and running a company that, and I'm sure every industry says the same thing, but it's kind of like, and I probably said this in the military as well, but it's like, if you haven't been through it, it's very hard to relate to it. And so I think those founder relationships are very vital, and I love that you've found and created an environment where you can have those open dialogues, because, you know, so often for me, I found the things that I felt were so unique to my situation are actually so universal to startups. Even my good friends who aren't in startups, it's very hard to open up about those things or for them to understand it unless they've been through it. So I think it's just very, very helpful to have others who have walked that walk and can, you know, share their problems and their solutions. And I think it's an important component for tactics, but also just the emotional side of starting a company.
Yeah, definitely. It was another way for us to find a way to vent a little bit, because, you know, both of us have wives. They don't want to hear us complain. You know, once we start hiring employees, they don't want to hear us complain. So I kind of jokingly say this is AA for entrepreneurs, but it really is. It's a safe space to kind of really get out what's bothering you and try to talk it out a bit so that you can find a way to solve it.
That's awesome. What about Operation Code? What would you want listeners to know about Operation Code and how they might engage with them?
Yeah, Operation Code is a great organization. It's run by David Molina, who's a really good gentleman based out of Portland, Oregon. I'm no longer on the board, but I was one of the founding board members. And what I've really loved seeing is how the community is growing. And so the mission for Operation Code is really to get transitioning military veterans who want to get into programming specifically. They want to learn how to be a programmer. They have built a great community to support one another and find mentors to help you become a great programmer. And I think it was such an honor to be part of one of the founding board members. It was great to see where the organization is headed. And I think it's going to keep going and growing. They just announced a great partnership, ironically with Patriot Bootcamp. So they're working closely with that organization as well. So because entrepreneurs, they want a myriad, they want a wide spectrum of skill sets, and having the ability to program something or build a website or build an application is really important. And I think a really important skill set for most entrepreneurs.
That's great. I'm also liking to ask people now about mistakes and failures, because I think that they're so vital for how we learn and how we grow. And I'm wondering if, since your time in the Navy, if you can think of one failure that you'd be willing to share and kind of what you learned from that or took away from that experience.
In the military or in my entrepreneurial journey?
Entrepreneurial journey, yeah, post Navy.
Sure. I think the biggest one was I walked into a lot of these investor meetings with, as I said before, a lot of assumptions that it was just going to be easy for me to walk in and say, check out this idea. It's super rad. You should fund it. And it's wrong. It was just a wrong assumption. And I think back at some of the earlier conversations I had with some really, really big firms. And I'm almost embarrassed that I made those calls. You know, like if I could go back and tell Josh 2 years ago, don't pick up the phone. Don't even email that person. Like, stop. But I mean, it's just you, but you don't know what you don't know yet. I'll tell a quick story. When I first started in the music industry, the reason I started was because a friend of mine was having a really hard time finding a place to play in the Bay Area. And we said, well, why don't I pretend to be your booking agent and I'll book a gig for you? And so that's exactly what I did. I got on the phone with a venue and I got a couple of bands, and they were like, you know, you need to get a really good headlining band. And so we found this manager locally in the Bay Area, and I called him up and I said, look, we're going to do this show at this venue in the Bay Area, and we would love your band to headline. And he goes, well, I'm not sure. I said, I'll tell you what, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to go to Guitar Center and I'm going to go get a mandolin, and I'm going to go to the zoo and I'm going to go get a monkey, and we're going to put monkey with a mandolin on the marquee, and we're going to sell that place out. Your band could either be a part of it or not be a part of it. I had no idea what I was doing. Never would do that again. But I mean, it's one of those things, like there was some arrogance there, and I did the same thing. I did the same stupid mistake as an early entrepreneur. Like, I'm going to go in, they're going to love what I'm doing, and they're just going to fund it. And just like that show, it tanked. It was horrible. And so I think there's this piece of you that really loves and is really attached to your product or your service. And you know, you can see the idea. You can see where it's going to go. But you really have to do what you can to showcase how big the opportunity is, why you're the right team to win at it, and how you're going to do it. If you can't show those three things, nobody's going to give you a dollar for it.
Yeah, that's great advice, man. It's that clash of optimism and idealism with brutal reality. And I can relate to that a lot. I always like to keep the last question open-ended and just say, you know, I know we've covered a lot of different topics, but I'm wondering, what have we not talked about that you'd really want to share with those veterans who are listening? And that could be personal or professional, but what else would you like them to know?
I think at the end of the day, it's, you kind of touched on a little bit, you mentioned it. It's, you know, going through this journey is really difficult, and you shouldn't do it alone. You should find a network of folks. You should find mentors that help you. We got really lucky going through Techstars. We have some great mentors, people like Harper Reed, who was the 2012 CTO for the Obama administration. You know, we never would have gotten any headspace with that guy, but you know, now he emails us every now and then to find out how we're doing. And it's those caliber of people that really help you, because they've gone through the same things that you will be going through. And so having a network of people that you can pull from, keep up to date, and really get great advice from is so key. It's so important, because you're going to be stressed. You're going to feel as though this is it. I can't do this anymore, but you just need to keep pushing. One of the things that I've always stressed new entrepreneurs is you got to keep a lot of people up to date, because they want to keep seeing that you have the stamina to keep going with this. And so we've been doing Brightwork for over a year now. And so a lot of the early discussions we've had with investors, we've kept and we've fostered those. And as a result, those investors have either said, reach this milestone and I will cut you a check, or they've already jumped in and invested. And so everything around your business is about how you can support the ecosystem around your business. And that's not just customers. That's business development. That's mentors. That's investors. That's anybody you think you can be helpful and who can be helpful to your business. And so I think that's probably the biggest thing that I don't think we really spend a lot of time on, is how important the mentor network is to a business. It's so key to have a great mentor network for your business.
That's great. Well, Josh, I appreciate your time and advice on this. And for listeners, I'll put show notes in with all the links to the different sites that Josh talked about, as well as his site, which you can find at brightwork.io. And I look forward to seeing your continued success with this, Josh. And I appreciate your being an example of a veteran who's striking out and creating something new and just following your passion.
Great. Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks.
Surface.
Thanks for listening. Three important notes before you go. First, Audible.com is offering a free audiobook for Beyond the Uniform listeners. I love Audible. I get 3 books a month, and it's a great way to use net, or no extra time, to polish off books while you run, drive, etc. If you go to beyonduniform.io/books, you'll not only find this offer, but you'll also find a list of every single book that has been recommended on this show. One in particular I'd recommend is The Hard Thing About Hard Things. This is a great story of determination and also a glimpse at what startups are really like. That's at beyonduniform.io/books. Second, there are so many great resources out there for veterans, it can be difficult to know all about them. That's why at beyonduniform.io/directory, you'll find a list of every single resource that's been mentioned on the show or that I've been able to find. You can also add your own if you find one I've missed. Lastly, I've put together several different free ebooks that provide data for veterans about their civilian career possibilities. This quantitative information serves as a great complement to the qualitative interviews I do each week. Go to beyonduniform.io, click on resources, and you'll be all set. Have a great week, and I'll be back next week with more interviews with military veterans about their civilian career.